Welcome back, everyone, to the Chaos Ball Podcast. Thanks for tuning in to this April review of the start of the season. I don't know what I'm going to call it yet, but just a review of the first month and change-ish of the season so far, because I think it's important now to look back on the month that we just had and declare it a success or not. One of the keys to the season for me this year for the Mariners was a strong April start, and I will get into that and make my official declaration whether it was a strong start or not. But first, I have three very short topics I'd like to talk about. So skip ahead 5 minutes if you don't want to hear me talk about something other than the Mariners. But before I really get into the Mariners and April and where we're at for the rest of the season, I'd like to mention three things. One, there was a B delay at Chase Field the other night, Diamondbacks Dodgers. There was a B delay. If you're plugged in at all on the internet, or even just on like MLB Network, to baseball, you would have seen this bee delay. There was a swarm of bees. The game was delayed damn near 2 hours. I think it was hour 55, which I'm sure a bunch of people left. But a bee delay, I've never seen this. It was a swarm, a hive of bees on the netting behind home plate. They had to get a local beekeeper. They had him up on like one of those lifts. They had him up there. He dealt with the bees, and then he threw out the ceremonial first pitch, and the Diamondbacks put him on the big board saying, "Thank you, bee guy." Phenomenal. That was amazing. I love baseball. Like, that is just, that man took his moment and he ran with it. I mean, they could have had like some recluse beekeeper who just comes in there, does his job, wants to leave. No, this guy was soaking it all in, and I love it. I wanted to mention that. Item number two, the jerseys. The jersey fiasco that everyone has talked about. Sounds like they're going to be fixed. MLB released this with squaring most of the blame on Nike, which is very funny. MLB Players Association has, and like MLB has a stake in Fanatics for, you know, like licensing and stuff. I mean, like, they sell like the team merch on their site and baseball cards and stuff like that. So, you know, they're not going to badmouth Fanatics like that. That's what most people think is the reason that this was like so squarely put the blame on Nike in this article that was written. It sounds like they're not going to change them until next year, which is like fine. I mean, that actually makes sense. That doesn't seem like a Fanatics or Nike problem. I mean, they already made them. I feel like it'd probably take a while to remake them. And then by the time they remake them, is it really worth it? No, I don't know if I've gotten like 100% confirmation on if they're this season or next season. It sounds like it'll be next season, but that's just interesting. Now, like, if we look back at highlights, it'll be so easy to tell, like, oh, hey, that's the 2024 season. Like, you will be able to tell immediately. It's like that in 2020. You see 2020 with no fans. You see 2024 where you can't really read the names on the back of the jersey from a high camera angle. So that was the second item. Wanted to mention that. That is interesting to see if anything else comes of it. Third item, also related to jerseys, more City Connects came out. The Mets came out. I think the Mets is kind of mid besides the hat and the helmet. But the Rays, the Tampa Bay Rays City Connects. Voila. Oh my God. They're so nice. The jerseys themselves are, I think, just good. I think the jerseys themselves are good looking. I think the Mariners with the black pants and the blue top, I'm not a fan of the black pants, but the Rays have an all black. I think if you're going black pants, I think you got to go all black with like a colorful trim like they did. I think they could have went way more colorful, but I think the jersey itself looks good and clean. Where the genius lies in this City Connect is the logos. The logos are phenomenal. Some of the best logos I've seen, and like hats and shirts I've seen in the history of baseball. The skateboarding Tampa Ray is the hardest MLB logo I've ever seen in my entire life. It goes insanely hard. There's like the manatee resting on the baseball bat. I mean, it was just, oh, I wanted to mention that too, because the jersey itself, sure, it's cool. The logos is where this is amazing. And they're having a giveaway this year with a Tampa logo, one of the logos on like a skate deck they're giving out, which is really cool. I think they nailed this a 10 out of 10 rollout of the City Connectors. I think the jerseys are more like a 7 to 8 A tier. They look clean, could have been better, but I think all in all, all the logos and everything are phenomenal, and the hats look really cool. Yeah, the Ray logo with a bridge built into it basically too is really sweet. Every logo as part of the City Connectors is amazing. I just wanted to mention that off rip as well. But now, without further ado, it's the April plus a couple extra day review of the Seattle Mariners 2024 season up until this point. As I mentioned earlier, one of my big keys to the season in my preseason podcast was a strong April, something that they hadn't really done in recent years. So was April a strong month? Did they start strong like I asked? And this is also, it's not just April, like I said, April and change. It's April plus some days in March, the four games they played in March. And then I'm also going to roll May 1st into this because that wrapped up the Braves series. So that kind of is a nice little plus five extra days on top of April. So it's April and change, but it's predominantly April. But was it a success? You know, I don't know. We're going to explore that. I am going to just paint with a broad brush here on like the team as a whole, their record, where they sit, how they did against the opponents, rant a little bit on what I think a successful April was and if this was that. And then I'm going to look at team stats, and then I'm going to look at more individually, and then look forward to May and beyond. And that should really fill out the episode today. So strap in. I have a lot to say, and I have a lot of stats to throw at you. So, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast and you're not familiar with a lot of the stats I already say, I could explain some while I say them here, but I just want to preface, there's going to be a lot of acronyms and just stats that I'm assuming if you're a listener of the show, you probably know by now. But was April good? It was good. I think it was a good month. They went 17-14, which you love to see it because it's not quite a 550 winning percentage. It's a 54.8 winning percentage. Of course. Of course, it's 54 plus, you know, 8. It has to be. I mean, it's perfect. Like, Jerry DePoto is sitting in his office right now just snickering. He's just, yes, it's all going according to plan. I told those greedy little fans they must worship me and be patient. 54% in our sights. I just can't believe it. And their Pythagorean record is also 17-14, which makes sense. I mean, they've looked like a 17-14 team, to be honest with you. Like, they split the first series against the Red Sox, and then they lost four straight series against the Guardians, the Brewers, the Blue Jays, and the Cubs. All good teams. And after that happened, it was like, oh, okay, they're kind of doing the same thing they did the last couple of years, where we know they are probably better than this, but how much better? And they're not starting the year off great. Part of that, for sure, is the fact that they've built a team around bad offense. And offense in April is particularly bad, and offense in Seattle in April is the worst. So the pitching and the pitching was scuffling. It was scuffling early on until like April 10th, when all those crazy numbers we were seeing now started. They were scuffling, and I wasn't worried about the pitching. The offense, I was like, yeah, it's going to be what it is. But I wasn't worried about the pitching. I don't think anyone else was really worried about the pitching before April 10th. It was like two starts for each starter, and the bullpen is like the smallest possible sample ever. So I wasn't super worried. And then after that, they went on to win five straight series up until this point. They don't look like they're ever going to lose a series again, is what it feels like. They swept the Reds, and then they won series against the Rockies, the Rangers, the D-backs, and the Braves, all 2-1. So only one sweep in there, but winning series 2-1 is good. That's a good thing. You want to do that. That is more wins than losses, if my calculations are correct. Those are all pretty good teams. I mentioned that in the preview pod too, where it was going to be tough to have a really, really strong start to the season because the schedule is tough. Just coming out of the gate, those are all really good teams. Not really good. Those are all good teams besides the Rockies. The most recent series that just wrapped against the Braves was the most impressive series win, probably. Sweeping the Reds at home was great. But the Braves just obviously are probably the best team on here. The Guardians, looking back at it, and the Brewers, even the Cubs, like all those are really solid teams too. And they won and they lost series against them. But you beat a divisional opponent, the Rangers, you beat the D-backs, who are a solid team, and then you beat the Braves. And the Braves are one of the best teams in baseball. That's encouraging. And they did it with pitching. They really, offensively, they did not look good, but they did it again on the back of their pitching like they have been all year. The only true bad team, again, they played, it was the Rockies. And I think, you know, they should have swept the Rockies. If I feel like if that weather didn't happen, they would have swept them. There's no basis for that statement, but I'm just going to say it. There are a lot of teams, though. I will say there are a lot of teams that are just like good teams this year. There aren't a lot of truly bad teams in my mind. Like you have, like the Astros have a bad record, but they're not a truly bad team. Even the Angels. I don't think the Angels are even like a truly bottom feeder team. Maybe without Mike Trout, they are. But like it's the White Sox and the Marlins and the Rockies, I think, are the basement right now. Otherwise, every other team has something going on. And then there's also not that many truly like elite teams. Like there's maybe by the end of the season, like two or three elite teams, like maybe the Dodgers, like the Braves, probably the Yanks and the Orioles are both starting hot, but we'll see how the season goes on. Like the Guardians and the Royals and like the Rockies, or not the Rockies, the Tigers to an extent. The Cubs and the Brewers, all really good starts, but like looking at it, like the Dodgers and Braves probably, and then maybe the Orioles, maybe the Yankees. We'll see as the season goes on, but there's not like truly, truly elite teams, and there's a lot of just good teams. There's a lot of teams that are similarly like talent-wise to the Mariners. So I think they handled that slate really well. But I think they're, the entire year, there's going to be a lot of teams that the Mariners play that are going to be looking at like 80 in the 80s win total projection wise. There's just a lot of teams in the middle right now, which I think is good for baseball. And even then, I think April is tough. Like looking at the schedule in June, I'm not going to rattle off the opponents, but if you just look at the schedule in June, that is what an easy schedule in 2024 looks like for a month. Otherwise, I think it's going to be similar to this month. I think it's just going to be playing a lot of solid teams. So in a vacuum, 17-14 with a 9-run differential is honestly what this team is kind of expected to do. So in a vacuum, wouldn't call it a strong start. I'd call it a fairly median outcome. I think it's a good start. It's good that there's three games above 500. The 9-run differential, it's positive. That's something to take away. I wouldn't call it a strong start. But when you look at it in the context of the division, then I can probably call it at least a good start, and then maybe even a strong start if you just look at it in the context of the division, because they sit in first place. The Rangers in second are 16-15, a game back. They have looked about as expected as well with how many pitching injuries they have. I mean, we knew they were going to kind of struggle on that end until they got those guys back, and it looks like they will, and they have been. The A's are in third, way better so far than expected, but I don't think they're going to challenge for the division this year. I think I took their over in the beginning of the season. I didn't think they were going to be the worst team in baseball again this year. I didn't think 15-17, third place in the division, was attainable. But here they are. Go A's, honestly. And the Angels are 11-20 in fourth. They've really taken a dive after a strong start, and now Mike Trout is hurt, and so there's really no hope. I mean, there wasn't much hope with him, so I mean, they're pretty much out of the picture. The biggest reason why the context makes this a pretty strong April for the Mariners is the Astros being in dead last at 10-20. And we know they're better than this. And even at 10-20, they're only 6.5 back because it's so early on. It's hard to really get that much separation from the division unless you're in division with, you know, the White Sox, the Marlins, or the Rockies. It's hard to really get super far back this early on. So they're only 6.5 back of the Mariners, but 10-20 is a is really, really a bad start, even for great teams. That is a tough, tough hole to climb out of. If they want to win at least 90 games, and they won 90 last year, and last year's team was pretty similar to this year's team. Maybe it's not as good as recent Astros years, but they won 90 games. And if they want to do that again, they'll basically have to play like an 100-win team the rest of the way this year. And I'm not sure if they can do that. And if they want to win like 95, they got to play like a 110-win team. Like it's a really big hole to get out of. And I think the pitching injuries, it just might be a situation where by the time they get everyone back and healthy, the guys in the interim on the pitching staff just haven't done the work that they've needed to. They got Verlander back finally, but, and like with Rene Blanco, the numbers he's putting up, you'd think they'd be better, but like guys like a Hunter Brown, it was kind of key to the early season for them, and he has not been good. And they spent so much money on Josh Hader and looked like they were going to have an amazing bullpen, and it was a very tough month for that bullpen. I think they won't be as bad all year, but it is what it is. This is the hole they've dug themselves. Now, like if any teams are going to fumble the division and let them back into a division race, the Rangers and Mariners look readily prepared to do just that. So them scuffling so bad early on, though, is so good for the Mariners and the Rangers for that matter. But it makes me feel so much better about the M's only being 17-14. So with that, I will officially declare the start of the season a good start. I'm not going to say strong. It's a good start based on results. Based on the stats, it's like immediate outcome. Again, 17-14 with a 9-run differential off the back of really poor offense and historically great pitching for 3 straight weeks. That literally is impossible probably to continue. So results-based, good start. Looking under the hood and like how they got here, the process is like making me very not scared. I'm just kind of even keeled about it. This is kind of what was expected largely from this team. I expect the offense, I expect going forward the offense to be a little bit better than this, and I expect the pitching to be slightly worse. Not this good, but still great. And it being so far in the extreme offensively and pitching wise, it's evened out to like exactly kind of where we expected. It is what it is. They're still in first place. So let's just delve into some team stats. And I'm going to start with the offense. And I have a lot to say, a lot of stats to say about the offense. I have more to say about the offense and the pitching because I have more gripes with the offense. And it's kind of fascinating, their offensive numbers. It's like actually, I was doing this deep dive on like Fangraphs and Baseball Savant, where I spend a lot of my time. And boy, it's just like, it's a crazy team. I don't know how they keep building teams that are just so uniquely weird. But it's, I think the Mariners are governed by some sort of higher power. I think Jerry DePoto is like the architect of the Mariners, sure. But he doesn't govern their nature and how they play and the heritage and the general, again, like the nature of how they get where they are, and nobody really knows why they are the way that they are. But, you know, it's the team that I and most likely you have chosen to love, so we live with them. These are awful. These are going to make you sad. Offensive team stats. As of May 2nd, an off day when I'm recording this, as of May 2nd, they have scored 111 runs total, 26th overall in Major League Baseball. That's really bad. That's on pace for just barely better than like the 2010 Mariners, which is real bad. 3.58 per game, which is also bad. That's 26th as well in the league. They have a 219 batting average, which is 27th overall in the league. A 297 OBP, which is also 27th in the league. And a 352 slug, which is 26th in the league. And then the kicker, the offseason narrative, they have 326 strikeouts, which is first overall. You don't want to be first. They have the most strikeouts of anyone in the league by like 20 strikeouts. It's not like super close. Yuck. Yuck, yuck, yuck. Big time yuck. That is really bad. Once again, very poor. Overall, offensively, very poor. And very poor with runners in scoring position. It's one thing to be really bad with runners in scoring position. And you're maybe like a good offensive team. If you're a bad offensive team, it's like, of course they're going to be bad with runners in scoring position. They have a 219 average with runners in scoring position, which is 22nd in the league. So that honestly, out of all of those things I read, they rank the best in that regard, which is hilarious. And now really, let's get into why this is weird. So obviously the strikeouts are really bad. And leading the league in strikeouts, after supposedly targeting that as an area of improvement in the offseason, is hilarious. And also not that surprising, given the acquisitions that they made. I'll reiterate again, and I feel like I'm going crazy saying this all the time. The strikeouts are bad. Yes, the strikeouts are bad. But they are just a symptom of simply building a poor lineup. It doesn't help that your theoretical best offensive player, franchise cornerstone, his biggest weakness is striking out. That unfortunately adds a lot to the narrative and just the strikeout numbers as a whole. That adds a lot. That's one thing where, like, ideally in a perfect world, your franchise cornerstone superstar would be elite in everything and not striking out that much and really helping the team in that regard. But he's adding to it. He's one of the worst on the team as of right now, and he has been in recent years. Maybe he'll take a big leap in that regard. Maybe this year, maybe not. Maybe next year, maybe never. Maybe when he's 29. I don't know. Striking out less as a team would certainly help, for sure. But it's also just like not building an optimal lineup, and that has led to poor offensive performance. It's like these guys need to get better at not striking out. It's like, no, I just think there just need to be better guys on the team. Like, listen, Juan Soto was available for trade. I'll say it again. That guy doesn't strike out. He could have helped. The guys they added to the team were not particularly elite guys at not striking out. It was always the boogeyman to, like, just kind of shift things around. And look, lo and behold, they still strike out a lot. And, like, it's in good old-fashioned, like, Mariners tradition that, you know, some of the seemingly good offensive moves, even though they weren't particularly, like, strikeout-driven, they haven't really panned out. I'll get into the new additions later, but now I'm really going to throw some stats your way. So, what's super interesting about this offense currently is they're fourth overall in Major League Baseball in hard hit percentage at 41.5%, that's really good as a team. Fourth overall in all of baseball. The teams above them, reading from first to fourth, are the Braves, the Dodgers, and the Orioles. What do all three of those teams have in common? They all have pretty elite offenses. Those are debatably the best offenses in the league. And then you have the Mariners in fourth in hard hit rate. And shortly behind them, it's the Kansas City Royals in fifth, which are having an awesome year. And it's like, oh man, that's really cool. That's really good. The Mariners offense must be humming. Obviously, it's not. I couldn't believe that, honestly, when I saw it. It made me actually angry because I know they haven't been good. And I'm like, how? You're hitting the ball so hard as a team. And that generally leads to good results. And they haven't been getting super unlucky. Some of their hitters have definitely gotten a little unlucky. But as a team, they haven't been getting super unlucky. Like, the team, like, metrics of, like, BABIP and, like, expected stats are all right where you'd expect them to be given their output. So for them to have that high of a hard hit rate and not, and like, next to those three teams that I said and not be good is, like, absurd. So I just kept looking at numbers. What is so hilarious is they have that fourth rated hard hit rate, but they have the fewest batted balls of any Major League Baseball team this year by a pretty big margin. And batted balls is just a ball that is hit and is in play. That is a batted ball. They have 687 total batted balls this season. The next closest team is the Reds with 716 so far away. For context, the Padres have the most with 894, just to give you a scale there. Not all batted balls are good, sure, but the Mariners having the fourth hardest hit rate of any team in baseball and the least amount of batted balls coupled with the most strikeouts makes me want to... It makes me so mad. They need to hit the ball more. So I looked at more numbers. I have pored over the contact and the take numbers as a team. And the Mariners are also not really making that bad of swing decisions comparatively to other teams. Honestly, they are amongst the leaders in out of zone swing percentage, which is what it sounds like. It's the amount of times you swing out of the zone at a pitch. Which just means, yeah, it just means they're not swinging at the pitch at that many pitches out of the zone. They're top five in that category in baseball. So they're taking pitches out of the zone at a pretty good rate, which is good. You don't really want to swing at pitches out of the zone. But when they do swing at those pitches, they are top three in the league in swing and miss percentage on the pitches out of the zone. Higher percentage being a bad thing in that case. So they are good at laying off pitches out of the zone. But when they do swing at pitches out of the zone, they are so bad at making contact with them. They are middle of the pack, roughly, in in-zone swing percentage, which is, again, what it sounds like, swing at pitches in the zone. But top six in the league at in-zone swing and miss, which, again, higher percentage is bad. So it's the same thing where, like, maybe they should be swinging more at pitches in the zone. But when they do swing at pitches in the zone, they are missing at a pretty high rate. They're also bottom five in the league in in-zone contact percentage, which, again, it makes sense given all those other stats. They swing and miss a lot of stuff in the zone. They're not great at making contact with pitches in the zone or out of the zone, to be honest. So all this really confirms that they're bad offensively. It confirms what we already knew. The hard hit rate being that good makes me so goddamn mad because it's so clear to me that when they hit the fucking ball, they're hitting it pretty hard on average, but they suck at hitting the ball. What's also super frustrating, I went deeper, is they're actually pulling the ball pretty well, which is good. They're pulling the ball sixth overall in pull percentage as a team, and that also comes with a seventh overall in Major League Baseball in fly ball percentage. Pulled hard hit fly balls are a good thing, and they're doing that pretty well. But they're so bad offensively. So it leads me to believe that they'll probably continue striking out a decent amount. I don't think that's going to change, to be honest. But the environment in Seattle will warm up. And I think at the very least, they won't be this god-awful on offense the rest of the way, which is not rocket science. You don't have to look at these stats to really make that prediction, but I did. So I don't think they're going to be great like all of a sudden on offense, but maybe not like this bad. Like, please don't be this bad. What is really interesting, too, the Braves, one of baseball's best offenses, it, like on paper maybe the best offense, has the highest in-zone swing percentage and the second highest in-zone swing and miss, but they hit the ball really hard. They hit a lot of home runs. So they're swinging like hell at pitches in the zone. They're missing a lot too, but they're swinging the most. So maybe the Mariners should just accept that, yes, they're going to swing and miss a lot, but swing as much as you possibly can in the zone because they're like 17th overall in the league in that. So if you're going to swing and miss at pitches in the zone anyway, at least swing it more. It's just, it's baffling to me. So in summation, the team as a whole, they hit the ball really hard. They lay off pitches out of the zone at a pretty good rate. But when they swing, they just can't hit the pitch. So you see what I told you about governed by a higher power? Like, what is this devilry? How have they managed to do that? It's absurd. And that is the team's offense so far this year. So it just baffles me. It really does. But I'm going to move on to the pitching. And I don't have as much to say about the pitching, but it's been so good, as we know. Like, those stats from April 10th on are just absolutely insane. We know this pitching staff was going to be good. They've lived up to the hype so far. It's been so much fun watching them pitch. Like, it's been awesome. And I think this will continue, again, maybe not at the insane clip as it has been, But I think it'll continue for sure. I think that's not a bold thing to say. But their pitching stats, their team pitching stats as a whole here, as you can expect, complete opposite as their hitting stats. Overall, they've allowed 102 runs. That is second best in the league. 2.96 ERA as a team, second best in the league. 3.38 FIP, which is fielding independent pitching, which is pitchers controlling as much as they can control. It kind of just takes the fielding out of it. Very easy way to explain it. That's third overall in the league. 125 ERA plus, which is ERA adjusted for like park factor and set against league average, 100 being league average, so that's 25% better than league average. They're fifth overall in that. So that just indicates to me them being second in the league in ERA and fifth in ERA plus. Some of that ERA is definitely pitching in April in Seattle, which we knew. We know that. So that, again, confirms, you know, what we kind of already know. 1.031 whip, which is walks and hits per innings pitch. What it sounds like, they're first in that category. They don't allow base runners very much. 291 strikeouts, that's second overall. 74 walks allowed, that is first overall by a pretty good margin. And as you'd expect, based on those two stats, they're first in strikeout to walk ratio at 3.93, which as a staff is pretty insane. Like that's kind of a ridiculous ratio to have as a entire pitching staff. And this is without Brian Wu. He has not pitched yet. He's close. He's made two rehab starts. He's coming back. And Hancock has been serviceable as a number five. Absolutely. Like he's really has been. Like if he was our number five the rest of the year, I would feel good about that. Brian Wu's going to come back and slot in for Hancock at the five. Maybe they'll go six man roto. Unsure. Matt Brash has not pitched for the team yet. His prognosis is not good though. He got shut down. So timeline unclear, really hoping he's not out for the year. And Gregory Santos, a key acquisition this offseason, has not pitched. So you have like three of Brian Wu is going to be your five, but still he was going to be good. And then maybe your two best relievers, at least two of your top four, if you factor in, I guess, Munoz and like Gabe Spire now at this point. Throw in Trent Thornton too, fuck it. But like two of your best relievers and a fifth starter who was going to probably be really good to start the year have not pitched yet, and the team has still been crazy good. The lab just continues to churn out solid relief pitchers. It's crazy. I could really get into the stats of how good they are, but I'm not going to because you know how good they've been. I don't need to. They're not as baffling. They've just been good. What I do have some interesting stuff though. Their staff has such an identity and everyone knows it by now. They attack you. They don't walk. They strike out a lot. They're the hardest throwing team in baseball on average. A lot of really good fastballs, a lot of splitters now, a lot of sweepers out of the bullpen. And just, they're just dogs too. Like they're, it's all like, they all kind of have a similar identity and they're all also just really good pitchers. Fun little stat here is they are tied for first in the league with the Reds for the best pop out percentage of any starting staff, which is cool. So it's just a lot of guys getting under seemingly, you know, high fastballs probably. They are first in opposite field percentage. StatCast breaks out like the pull percentage for the offense. I mentioned they break it out, batted balls into pull, straightaway, opposite field, and pop up. And the Mariners are first in the opposite field hit percentage here with hits given up, which makes total sense because, as I said, they're the hardest throwing staff in baseball on average. So a lot of guys are late and generally hits to the opposite field are not hit quite as hard as straightaway or pull. And if they are hit hard, the batted ball like outcome is generally worse even then. So, but they don't really get really many ground balls, which is interesting. They're not an elite ground ball team, not even close. So a lot of strikeouts and like middle of the pack home runs. I think it's a staff that we know will kind of live with giving up a couple home runs because they will just strike you out. They're not going to get a ton of ground balls, which is good because they don't necessarily have an elite infield defense behind them, but they do have an elite center fielder. So more fly balls is good because you have an elite center fielder. I don't have as much to say about the staff. The run they've been on since April 10th is not sustainable, but it's been awesome. I think still, even then, they are comfortably a top five pitching staff, rotation and bullpen moving forward, even factoring in regression to the mean, which will happen. But again, going forward, I think they're just, they're going to be good all year. And we're going to get Brian Wu back. And I'm praying to God Matt Brash is not hurt the rest of the year. I really hope not. I just hit my microphone, rubbing my eyes, thinking about Matt Brash being out for the year. But I'm knocking on wood. Now, let's just get into some of the players' individual stats. I try to focus sometimes every week on like a couple players and what they've been doing individually. It's hard to focus on all of them. Obviously, there's so many. So I'm just going to point out like positionally and like the new guys and focus a little bit on Julio and look at holistically, like who's been good, who's been bad, who should be better, who is doing, you know, what we're expecting. And to preface, I don't think I'm going to reference WAR at all in these stats. If I do, it's merely for fun. I don't really put much stock into WAR until like June, honestly. I definitely start peeking at the WAR leaderboards more in May and guys' WAR more in May, but I don't put a whole lot of stock in it till like June. I just wanted to preface that. Now, a lot of what I'm going to say, you probably already know. I mean, just looking at it, like, who's been good? Josh Rojas, man. He's been unconscious all year. He's been phenomenal. He's 171 WRC plus. That is 71% better than league average. That is insane. In a 24-game sample, like, he's now basically been playing every day at third base, with Urias playing every now and again against a lefty. He's been so good. Who else has been good? Like Canzone, by the numbers, I didn't love some of the numbers, but he was hitting for a good amount of power before he got hurt. Suck, he's hurt. Again, Luis Urias has been fine, better than I thought at the plate so far. And then Cal. Cal has really been the only other offensive piece that has been good. He's been doing right around what I and everyone probably expected. He has the most home runs on the team with 6. He has 111 WRC plus, which is, I would peg him as a 110 to 120 guy the whole year with solid defense that works out to like a season of like 4 WAR from a catcher, which is great. Kind of what he did last year. His 35% strikeout rate is a little high. I would expect that to come down a little bit, but he's probably going to sit above 30%. But that comes with an 11.5 walk rate, so that's a little bit better than league average. And that's just kind of what Kyle Raleigh is. He's more of a 3-outcome guy, and he's been doing that, all with a 280 BABIP, which is right in line with what we'd expect. So those have really been the guys who've been good. Everyone else has been below league average. Ty France, if you didn't listen to my episode last week, was it last week? Man, weeks are flying by. But I did a deep dive into Ty France, and it's been a confusing year for him this year. He's hitting the ball really hard. The outcomes haven't quite been there, but I have confidence in him going forward because he's hitting the ball hard, but still, I'm just going to need the outcomes to start being a little bit better. I need those slug numbers a little bit up. Mitch Haniger, really strong start. Really good first couple weeks. Has been pretty dreadful the past couple weeks. Basically split the month in half of really good and really bad. I didn't have a whole lot of expectations with him this year. I pretty much declared in the preseason episode that if he was league average, that would be a success. What's really been tough is his defense on right field has been truly awful. And it puts them kind of in a bind because they're just going to have to live with that defense because I think they're going to want to try to stick with Mitch Garver at DH because that's kind of where he has to play unless they really convert him to a first baseman or full-time backup catcher. I don't know. I think we're just going to have to live with the bad defense in right field. He just dropped the fucking fly ball the other day. He's fumbled balls picking them up to field them a few times this year. And at the plate, it's been really nice to see him back in Mariners uniform. He's had a couple like clutch hits, home run, which is cool, but I don't expect him to really be an above average player all year. If he's league average again, I think that's a success. And then who else? Besides the new guys, who else returning? Like Dylan Moore. I think Dylan Moore has been good. I just think he's been playing too much because he's had to. He's basically been the full-time shortstop with JP out. And JP, he was really bad before he got hurt. Really bad. I don't have much else to say. Just really, really bad. Dylan Moore in his stead, he looks like he doesn't play shortstop and he shouldn't every day. But at the plate, I think he's been fine. Again, it's not good if he's going to be an everyday player and put these numbers up. If he can put these numbers up and be a super utility, we're good with that. Who else returned? I mean, we saw briefly Jonathan Class A looked fine. We kind of saw like the free swing, lots of strikeouts, so a lot of the speed. He didn't hit any home runs, but we saw he can hit for power in like a very small sample. Sebi Savala has been truly terrible at the plate. Defensively, I think he's been fine. It's going to be tough. We're straddling the line here where how bad can you be offensively and still be valuable as a defensive catcher? And he's veering into the demotion territory for me now. He's been good behind the plate when he's played, but Blake Hunt has been raking in AAA. And I think at the very least, if Sevy keeps up this 40% strikeout rate with no walks and not hitting for any power of any kind, I think you might have to send him down to see if he can even hit in AAA and at least try Blake Hunt. Because I'm willing to sacrifice defense for a little bit more offense from a backup catcher. I don't have like super high hopes for that guy, but maybe he can hit. And then all the other guys, like Haggerty just got called up again. Samad Taylor only played 3 games. Leo Rivas has only played 2 games. He got his first hit the other night, a triple, which was awesome. He has a 449 WRC plus, which is sick. I expect him to keep that up. And yeah, those are all the kind of returning guys besides Julio saved to the end. And then now the new guys. How have the new guys been? They've been bad. They've been poor. They have plenty of time to right the wrongs of April. But man, it was an ugly month for both of them. It's looking like a classic Mariners gambit of making moves for the offense that that look good on paper, like both these guys, Polanco and Garver. Luke Rayleigh was like, okay, sure. He hasn't been great. I'm not going to talk about him. He hasn't been great. He's been striking out a lot, not hitting the ball hard. He has been played a weird amount. I talked about that already this year, but he hasn't been good when he's played. That acquisition I wasn't as bullish on. Whereas like Polanco and Garver, I was like, that makes sense for the team. Like Polanco, strikeout-wise, he's going to strike out. Same with Mitch Garver. But both of the guys are pretty good at getting on base. That's what Mitch Garver's elite at. And that's the only thing he's been good at this year. And Polanco and him both have proven they have power in the past. It was just them being on the field. And they've been on the field. They haven't been hurt yet. They've just been bad. Mitch Garver had his walk-off dinger the other night in that ridiculous game of the no-hitters battle between Bryce Miller and Max Fried, which was awesome to watch from a pitching fun perspective, but terrible as a Mariners fan. But Mitch Garver, that was a great moment for him. Maybe that'll be a catalyst for him to really, really turn it on. The bat flip just looked like a month-long sigh of relief in that bat flip. But they've both been just bad. Again, the only thing they both have been doing well is walking. Jorge Polanco is sporting an almost 16% walk rate, which is great. 4 home runs too, so I mean there's something there, but 89 WRC plus, 181 average, yeah, that's not good. Garver, 11.2% walk rate, and like that's his bread and butter, but also like 3 home runs, 67 WRC plus, that's not good. It's just not good. 143 average, just so bad. 176 BABIP too, but he really hasn't been hitting the ball hard, so I would expect the BABIP to tick up a little bit, but he's got to hit the ball harder if he wants to get more hits on his balls in play. And both of them have 31% strikeout rates, which is terrible. Really not good. That's really bad. I'd expect Polanco's, it's been ticking up in recent years as his power has been. I'd expect Polanco's to be above league average, but more in the 27-ish percent range, which is definitely livable if he can get 20-plus home runs with like a 13% walk rate the whole year, or even if he keeps up the 16%, which is crazy. But long story short, they've both been bad. Mitch Garver's a full-time DH. We need a full-time DH to put up really good offensive numbers, or he just doesn't belong on the team. Looking back, it was honestly crazy that Nelson Cruz put up the numbers he did with the Mariners. Same with Robinson Cano, but to a much more like wow extent, Nelson Cruz, because it was like, I mean, the Mariners always, like I said, it's in their heritage. Like, wow, that move looks good. That guy can really hit. He gets to the Mariners. He has his worst offensive years of his career. Then he departs the Mariners, and then he's great. Or he comes up with the Mariners and then departs, and he's great, like Adrian Beltre. Or again, like Polanco and Garver so far. It's like, oh, those guys have both been really bad. Nelson Cruz, it's crazy looking back. They acquired a full-time DH with money, with real cash money through free agency, might I say. Something Jerry DePoto, that guy, man, he wouldn't know giving that much cash to a free agent if it slapped him in the face. It's crazy he came to the Mariners. He had his best offensive years of his career. Like, he had a really good time in Minnesota. He had great years in the Rangers, but his best offensive years in terms of volume and output was on the Seattle Mariners, which totally goes against the mold of everything they're about. Nelson Cruz said, screw you, divine power that runs this team. I will put up like 150 OPS plus and 40 plus home runs every season with the Mariners playing basically every day. It's crazy that he did that looking back. Yeah, so the new guys have been bad. They have been not good. Don't have much more to say there. They just need to stop striking out as much. They need to hit for more power. It's just really not been good. They've just looked like bad hitters. Sometimes there's not much more analysis than the guys look bad. And then Julio. This team, whether we like it or not, will live and die by Julio Rodriguez and his output. And he's been bad. He's been really bad, especially given what we know he can do. He's been scorching the ball a decent amount. Singles, all singles. He has a 270 average. Which is like good. If he puts up a 270 average all year, that's good. But it's been the emptiest average. 310 on base percentage, bad. 328 slugging, awful. 57 isolated power, 0.057. 31% K, 4.7% walk. He's still playable every day because, one, you know he can be one of the best offensive forces in the league. You know what he can do. And two, he's still an elite center fielder and he already has 7 stolen bases. So like at the very least, like he's going to give you that, but he's going to need to be better offensively. I mean, it's been so bad. It's been really tough to watch too. He's a 395 BABIP because he's been hitting the ball really hard and on the ground and for singles. He has one home run. And like why you'd keep playing him, obviously, like it's Julio Rodriguez. Again, we know what he can do, but like his home run is the example of like why you keep playing him. First home run of the year, it's fastball in on the hands. He turns on it and crushes it. Like not many guys can do that to that pitch. And he can. It's just he hasn't really been doing it much. He did it once. A lot of ground balls, some line drives, really no power to the pull side, which has been the boogeyman for him since he's come up. It's just like it's the Vladdy thing. It's the Vladdy thing I'm worried about, where Vladdy had an MVP type season and Julio did kind of last year too. And even his rookie year, it was amazing output, but it's where the past 3 years for Vladdy, we've been like, oh man, he just needs to lift the ball more with power to the pull side. And he just keeps kind of like not doing that. And I'm worried Julio, like, he's only in year 3. It's just, if he starts hitting the ball in the air to the pull side as hard as he hits his singles, he could be, like, legitimately a slam dunk 7-8 win MVP like Ronald Acuna. That we could see those power numbers if he just starts doing that. And maybe he needs to go to a driveline or something. He needs someone to do something with his swing. And it's the approach, too. It's just so clear that he is pressing up there. It is clear that he is not letting the at-bat come to him. He is attacking. He is swinging out of his shoes on every pitch he swings out, which is fine if you're making contact, but he's not.
He's swinging out of the zone a lot. He still can't really hit a low breaking ball. There's been plenty of pitches in the middle of the plate that he's just missed. I think it's just piling. I think it's just piling up on him. The more he goes with being this bad, and it's a 90 WRC plus, which in the grand scheme of things for 1 month is not terrible. And so I'm not pressing the panic button yet. It's just looked bad. It's just looked very bad. So that is just some of the offensive numbers I want to talk about. Julio needs to improve. We need to see more power from him. Because again, really the only guys we've seen hit really well is Josh Rojas, MVP candidate Josh Rojas, and then Cal Raleigh. And that's about it. And Josh Rojas is not going to be 71% better than league average all year. But the fact that we've seen him do this with really low strikeout numbers at 15% and really high walk rate at 13% is really encouraging. And it's, again, it's like Julio, but the opposite. You can see it up there. You can see he's confident. He is taking the right pitches. He's making the right swing decisions. He's putting the barrel on the ball. And he's doing everything right up there. A pretty small sample, but like the fact that he can do 171 WRC plus in 24 games is so encouraging. And he's not going to keep that up, but what a start for him. And it just leads me to believe like he might be an above average player by the end of the season, above average at the plate, which would be so helpful if the rest of this team picked up the slack at all. I'm running on time here, but I don't have to focus on anyone specifically on the pitching staff. Everyone's been so good. George Kirby has been amazing. No, he's walking no one. After the scuffling, the only person who hasn't really had a bad start this year is Logan Gilbert and Bryce Miller. And their peripheral numbers, Bryce's especially, is like, it's coming. There's a really bad start in here. It's coming. Logan Gilbert has been the best pitcher this year by peripherals and raw numbers. And Hancock finally got kind of hit around last night by the Braves and more runs were scored. But really like a 4.75 ERA for a guy with that little experience in the five spot is totally serviceable when the rest of the staff is this good. Again, after the first couple weeks of the season, George Kirby has been George Kirby. Like, he's looked awesome. He's getting more whiffs, which is really encouraging. He's really brought up his K rate this year, which is like, if he brings that up to elite level with his command, like it's insane. It's insane. His start the other day, he struck out 12, was awesome. Luis Castillo has looked great since those first couple starts. His stuff has looked much better, which is really good. And then, yeah, Logan Gilbert has been the best pitcher, has been amazing, and it's been verifiable by all stats. Like, he has a 2 ERA, which is going to come up, but it's a 3.24 FIP, which is really, really good. George Kirby has a 2.05 FIP and a 4.18 ERA, which is, I warned you, at the start of the season, I warned you that could happen with George Kirby especially. And then Bryce Miller, 2.04 ERA, 3.79 FIP, just has been awesome. That fastball is humming. His two-seamer has looked a little bit better this year, which if he gets the sinker working, whew, with the splitter, oh, man. And then, yeah, Logan Gilbert's cutter, I want to talk about it every week. I want to talk about it every day. It's a perfect pitch with his arsenal, and it's been so good. I can't wait to get Brian Wu back. And then the bullpen, I got really no complaints. I mean, Munoz, I mean, I do have some complaints, obviously, but Munoz, I've said his stuff has kind of looked down. I don't know if I'm 100% confident in him being the closer, and evidently the team isn't either. I mean, like I said last week, that Stanek has been getting a lot of late innings, but his Stanek's stuff, his fastball particularly, is really good, but I mean, he doesn't know where he's throwing that thing. He has a 4.35 ERA now to match his FIP, basically line and line. I think that's what it's going to look like all year. He classic reliever. Tyler Salcedo has been great. He's been really good. Gabe Spire has been elite, and Trent Thornton has also been elite. Both of those guys doing what they've been doing is amazing. And I think it's going to continue. Maybe not like Trent Thornton has a 1.38 ERA, 2.14 FIP though, which is crazy good. Gabe Spire with a 0.84 ERA and a 2.39 FIP. So they'll come down to earth a little bit, but they've been really good. And I like Austin Voth has been better than I expected. And then the other guys who've pitched less, like Brett to something, Cody Bolton, Colin Schneider, like Tyson Miller. It's funny looking at Josh Rojas' name on this list of pitchers. They've all like looked like there's something there. Like it looks like the lab has identified there's something there that's worth pitching them, and that's good. That's very good. So I think I'm going to call it. I mean, it's been a good start to the season. Like I said, it's been good that the Astros are scuffling. It's made everyone in the division look better. But it's just, man, the offense, like I said, it's baffling to me how hard they can hit the ball and how little they do actually hit the ball. It's a choice. It's certainly a choice they've made. The pitching, phenomenal. I love watching every pitcher on this staff just cook up there. And looking forward to May and beyond, the May schedule has a lot of good teams. They play the Astros and Twins on the road. They play the A's and the Royals at home. Both surprisingly good teams this year. We'll see in a week or so if they're still doing that. And then they go on a very tough road trip to the East Coast. Three against the Orioles, three or four against the Yankees, and three against the Nationals, who the Nationals have been frisky this year. Again, we'll see what could change in the next like 3 weeks with them, but they are not just like a pushover team like they have been the past couple of years. They can definitely steal some from you. And then they finish the month coming back home against the Astros again, and then they start a series against the Angels. I think it's going to be key for them. When this episode comes out, they are in Houston for three games. I think it's going to be key for them to win that series. Obviously, they should win every series, but they should really sweep the Astros and really put them in the dirt. Like, if the Astros get swept by the Mariners and fall to 10-23, they could be dead. Like, genuinely, that would be a massive, massive hole to climb out of, and they'd be forced to trade Kyle Tucker to the Mariners at the deadline, and I would just love that. That'd be great. But all in all, this team, we know what it's going to be. The pitching has been really good. The offense has been really bad. I think I'd take a little less good pitching and a little bit better offense, at least from like Julio and Polanco and Garver. The core of that offense just needs to be better, plain and simple. You can look at all the stats you want. They just need to be better. Ty France continues to have a baffling year. I'll monitor his Ty France back meter every few weeks. And then looking forward to get Brian Wu back. We should be getting him back anytime soon. Like it's imminent, it feels like. So I'm looking forward to that. He was like genuinely maybe my most exciting pitcher to watch this year, just out of sheer, like, I'm so excited to see how his stuff plays over a full season. But we'll see. 17-14 in first at the start of May. Five series wins in a row. Like the vibes are pretty high, but the warning signs are there and there's ways to improve, and I hope they will. So thank you for listening. I appreciate it. I will be back next week to recap another week of Mariners baseball, but I will leave you with that. Thank you. Have a good rest of your week. And of course, go Mariners.